Hello, and welcome to Discussions with DPIC. I'm Robert Dunham, the Executive Director of the Death Penalty Information Center. In January 2016, the United States Supreme Court, in a case called Hearst v. Florida, declared Florida's death penalty statute unconstitutional because it required a judge rather than a jury to make the critical findings of fact that determined whether a capital defendant would live or die. The state legislature responded by enacting an amended statute that the Florida Supreme Court subsequently declared unconstitutional. The Florida decision affected nearly 400 death row prisoners, but the court decided it would enforce its constitutional ruling in only about half of those cases. Today, we are joined by Karen Gottlieb, who is the co-director of the Florida Center for Capital Representation at the Florida International University School of Law in Miami. Karen has nearly 40 years of experience as an appellate attorney, and during this time, she's represented capital defendants in their appeals in both state and federal courts. Karen was involved in the litigation in the Hearst case. We're delighted to have her with us today to discuss the 2016 Supreme Court decision in Hearst, what it means, and what has happened in Florida since that time. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the decision in Hearst versus Florida in 2016. What was that case about?
The Supreme Court was looking at Florida's death penalty system that provided for an advisory jury. The jury then made a recommendation whether the sentence should be life or death by a simple majority vote. And the trial judge, without having any specifics known, you know, without knowing what the jury found in terms of the aggravating and mitigating factors, could then accept the jury's recommendation or could it impose a different sentence. The U.S. Supreme Court back in 2002 had decided that the Sixth Amendment required that a jury, not a judge, find each fact that was necessary to impose a sentence of death. So the question was, does Florida's system, which provides for a jury recommendation, escape the holding of Ring versus Arizona, or is it equally violative of the Sixth Amendment?
So what did the court decide?
So the court decided that a jury's mere recommendation is not enough, that the jury has to make the findings that make it a defendant eligible for a death sentence.
In the Hearst decision, the U.S. Supreme Court said that Florida juries didn't make the fact-finding necessary to decide whether somebody was sentenced to death or not. Well, what was it that the jury was supposed to have been doing then?
Well, they were supposed to consider the aggravating and mitigating circumstances, and they were supposed to weigh them, and they were supposed to decide whether the defendant should be sentenced to life or death on a mere majority vote, and then make a recommendation to the judge. But they never told the judge what aggravating factors they were considering, what mitigating factors they were considering. They just gave a general verdict saying life or saying death.
Did the judge have independent authority to redo the whole thing, or was the judge bound in any way by what the jury did?
The judge was supposed to give great weight to the jury's recommendation, but the judge was in no way bound by their sentencing recommendation. And in fact, defendants were sentenced to death, even though their jury recommended a life sentence, and defendants were actually executed where the juries had recommended a life sentence. Buford White, for example, had a 12-0 recommendation for a life sentence from his jury, and the trial judge overrode that. He was sentenced to death. Mr. White was executed.
So the U.S. Supreme Court in 2016 says that's no good. The fact-finding by the judge isn't enough. You have to have fact-finding by the jury. Were there other cases that people were unconstitutionally sentenced to death and executed before this decision?
There were. I know of four death row inmates who were executed, although their juries had recommended a life sentence. Ernest Daubert, Bobby Francis, Buford White, and Bernard Bolander.
And were there other people who had been sentenced to death and executed with jury recommendations for death, but not unanimous recommendations?
Oh, absolutely. A large majority of the recommendations for death were not unanimous.
What you seem to be saying, and I will make this clear to our listeners, is that a substantial number of the people in Florida prior to 2016 who were executed had been given sentencing proceedings that, under United States Supreme Court precedent from 2016, they'd say that they were unconstitutionally sentenced to death.
Absolutely.
The U.S. Supreme Court says, Florida, your statute is unconstitutional. What does the state do next?
So the decision came out the same day that the legislative session started in Florida. And as you can imagine, the legislature very quickly addressed and wanted to reenact a death penalty statute. This is Florida. There was great debate over what vote would be necessary for a death verdict. The prosecutors were strongly arguing that a majority vote was the correct answer, and that had always been Florida's system. There had not yet been any criticism of that majority vote requirement. Ultimately, they agreed to argue for a 9-3 death recommendation. The Senate rejected that and decided that a unanimity should be required. But when it came in before the House and the Prosecutors Association presented to the House, the vote of the House was that the recommendation should be by a 9-3 vote. That's 9 votes in favor of the death penalty. Somehow there was negotiations behind closed doors. The result was a statute that required 10 votes. So 10 votes for death was a death verdict.
So legislatively, there's a compromise on how many people have to vote for death before a death sentence can be imposed. But you can't compromise constitutional rights. So what happened after the 10-2 recommendation was adopted as law?
The Florida Supreme Court soon thereafter decided Hearst v. State on remand from the U.S. Supreme Court. And in that decision, they decided that the jury had to be unanimous on all of the findings that were required for a death sentence. The aggravating circumstances were proven, that sufficient aggravating circumstances were proven, and that the aggravating circumstances outweighed the mitigating circumstances. But they also determined that the final vote by the jury had to be unanimous. I should say that the legislature in that 2016 session did finally do away with the life override. No longer could a jury recommend or return a life verdict and have a trial judge impose a death sentence. So that was changed in 2016. And very quickly thereafter, the 2017 statute was enacted in response.
And what does the 2017 statute do?
So the 2017 statute does require unanimity in the final jury vote.
When we're looking at what's happened in Florida, Florida had warning multiple times that its statute might be unconstitutional. And there have been other times in the past that the Florida death penalty statute had been unconstitutional. Why was it that the legislature, instead of addressing all the issues at one time and trying to come up with a statute that would be constitutionally safe, why was it that they took part measures and responded to the narrowest possible construction of the Supreme Court's warning about why their statute was unconstitutional?
Well, it's difficult to ascribe motives to the legislators, but I think they simply thought they were reacting to what the public wants. And unfortunately, they seem not to be aware of the change in public opinion in Florida. Our polls are now repeatedly showing that a majority of Floridians, if they're given a choice between a death sentence or a sentence of life without parole, they will favor life without parole. It seems the message just hasn't reached Tallahassee yet.
So here we are again with another unconstitutional Florida death penalty statute. The U.S. Supreme Court in 2016 decides that the Florida statute violates its 2002 decision in Ring versus Arizona. But lots of defendants have gone to death row in between. Why didn't the Florida courts think Ring applied to them?
In Arizona, the jury had no role in sentencing at all. And while Ring was pending in the U.S. Supreme Court, the governor signed two death warrants, one for Amos King and one for Lynroy Bodison. The U.S. Supreme Court stayed those death warrants pending their resolution in Ring v. Arizona. But when the court decided Ring versus Arizona, 4 days later, they denied certiorari in both cases, which automatically vacated the stays of execution and permitted executions to go forward.
So these are two Florida death row inmates who were in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court has stopped their cases from going forward so it can decide this Arizona case. It decides the Arizona case in favor of the defendant, and then it lifts the stay and allows the two Florida defendants to be executed.
Unfortunately, yes. I mean, it came before the Florida Supreme Court on remand, and the Florida Supreme Court entered a stay so that they could consider the effect of Ring on the Florida statute. But ultimately, they decided the U.S. Supreme Court vacated, well, instead of what the court would typically do if a decision had an effect on another case, is they would vacate the judgment below, they would reverse, and they would remand the case to the lower court. It's referred to as a GVR, granted, vacated, and remanded. But the court didn't do that. So the Florida Supreme Court took that as a go-ahead. They took that as, we don't have a problem with the Florida statute. It's not affected by Arizona. And there's also a basic premise that it is for the U.S. Supreme Court to overrule its own decisions. It's the highest court of the land. It's not for the Florida Supreme Court to overrule something that the U.S. Supreme Court has already declared. And the U.S. Supreme Court had repeatedly reviewed and repeatedly declared the Florida statute to be constitutional. Mr. King and Mr. Bodison were executed. And every defendant without fail after that was raising the same claim.
So we now have 14 years of people raising claims that the Florida statute is unconstitutional and still being sentenced to death.
Yes, unfortunately that is the case. The identical claim raised by Timothy Hurst was raised over and over and over again. And over and over and over again, the claim was denied, and 41 people were executed between the time that the Supreme Court announced its decision in Ring v. Arizona and the time that the court announced Hurst versus Florida. In fact, you know, in 2005, which was 3 years after Ring v. Arizona, the Florida Supreme Court, in rejecting what we would call a Ring claim, noted that in over 50 cases since Ring's release, they had denied the claim. So you can see it was again and again until the court finally granted certiorari to Timothy Hurst.
Was there any indication from the Florida Supreme Court during this 14-year period that maybe the legislature should take action to switch from allowing non-unanimous jury verdicts to requiring unanimity?
Yes. In State v. Steele, the Florida Supreme Court pointed out that Florida was the only state in the country that required no unanimity at all, no unanimity on any of the findings, and no unanimity in terms of the final vote for either life or death, and asked the court, asked the legislature to reconsider whether unanimity should be required. But there was no action in response by the legislature.
So in a sense, then, with that warning from Steele and the 2002 opinion from the United States Supreme Court, you kind of have a red flag being waved in front of the legislature that any death sentence that gets imposed after that could be constitutionally problematic.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But nothing happened.
And nothing happened. And it's very sobering when you think that 92 people have been executed under a Florida death penalty scheme that is unconstitutional, that we now know is unconstitutional. Needless to say, that all of those individuals will have no chance to argue for release under Hearst.
So now the Florida Supreme Court rules. Hearst gets decided. There's some other cases that also get decided. How did the court decide about who was going to get the benefit of this decision and who wasn't?
Well, when Hearst was decided, the question was, what do we do with 386 capital prisoners on death row? The Florida Attorney General's office argued that the Hearst decision was not retroactive, and any error was harmless if the jury voted under the prior advisory jury system. And remember, it was just a recommendation. But if they voted 12-0 for death, that the Hearst error would be harmless. They also argued that if a defendant waived the advisory jury, again, under this former recommendation system, a completely different system, that somehow that waiver should now be deemed a knowing and intelligent waiver of the current and very new and, as we've discussed, very different constitutional right to jury involvement in the death penalty system.
So who gets a new sentencing? Who gets their death sentence overturned and who doesn't?
Well, in terms of retroactivity, the Florida Supreme Court in two decisions, Assay versus State and Mosley versus State, decided that some prisoners would get a resentencing and some would not. And the way they divided the two groups was they looked to see whose case was final on direct review. That means they had already had a direct appeal to the Florida Supreme Court and the initial petition for writ of certiorari to the U.S. Supreme Court. If that process, that direct review process, had been completed prior to the date that Ring v. Arizona was decided, so that brings you back to June 24th, 2002. If the case was final prior to that date, there would be no relief. So, only if the case was not final on June 24th, 2002, would the prisoner be granted a resentencing.
So the trigger isn't when the trial happened?
No.
That means that some people who were tried earlier than others could have their death sentence overturned, and people who were tried later wouldn't have it overturned, just depending on how fast the appeal was decided.
Well, in general, what happened was the older cases were denied relief and newer cases were granted relief. And there are a lot of problems with that. But before I go into all the problems, I think it's important to point out that the 12-0 jury votes are not being granted relief. The Attorney General's argument has been successful thus far. Equally, the defendants who have waived the advisory jury proceeding in years past, those individuals are not entitled to a resentencing. So that group is 60 prisoners lose for that reason. Approximately 165 prisoners lose because they're on the wrong side of that ring date of June 24th, 2002. And there's really fundamental problems with the way this line is being drawn, because the older cases are more warranting of a resentencing, perhaps, than the new. The defendants in the older cases have been on death row for many long years. They've demonstrated over this longer length of time that they're capable of adjusting to that environment and not posing any threat. They don't endanger any valid state interest. They also have suffered longer. They've had many years in solitary confinement awaiting execution. And, you know, the longer the delay, the weaker any argument can be made for deterrence or retribution.
Yeah, Karen, isn't it also the case that in the older cases, the older a case is, the greater the likelihood was that the representation was inadequate, so that there were people who would have had very different trials if they were tried years later than they were?
Absolutely. Mitigation is now so much better understood. Mental illness and trauma. Indeed, we have a specialty aptly called mitigation specialists, people who are trained to understand and uncover mitigation that heretofore simply was never found. So the defendant's life story is now better explored. Its significance is better understood. And attorneys are better able to present the defendant's story to the jury. And evidence itself is more reliable these days. Junk science is continually being debunked, and forensic science's problems have been more and more revealed and studied. And I think we also have to look to the fact that there's been a change in public opinion. I mentioned this before. Numerous polls now show public support for the death penalty is markedly decreasing. So juries are less and less returning death sentences. And perhaps as a result of that, death prosecutions and sentences are down, reflecting, I think, a change in the attitude on the part of prosecutors, on the part of judges, on what constitutes what we refer to as the worst of the worst. Many of these older cases would never get a death sentence now.
Well, if the older cases were so much less reliable than the cases in which relief is being granted, aren't there constitutional challenges that can be brought to those people not getting relief under this Hearst decision?
Certainly the basic inequality, when you juxtapose the older cases against the new, this arbitrary and capricious result is being challenged under both the Eighth Amendment and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
And how have the courts responded to that so far?
We're waiting to see. We have not yet been successful.
We have up on the DPIC website a list of cases that have been reviewed by the Florida courts so far under Hearst, who've had their death sentences overturned since the decision. What's happened with those people?
They are coming back for resentencings, and almost all of them are now in the trial court and are awaiting a jury sentencing proceeding. Trial judges are, assigning trial attorneys to the cases. Mitigation specialists are looking into possible mitigation, and those cases will be retried in front of a sentencing jury.
Karen, you've said that so far the court has not, that the U.S. Supreme Court has not stepped in these cases since Florida versus Hearst was decided. There were a couple of cases that recently in which review was sought, and the Supreme Court said no, but there was there were dissents by some of the justices. Can you tell our listeners about those?
Yes, in the Trujillo case and the Oliver case, both cases had a death recommendation, remember, under this old system, that was 12-0. Justice Sotomayor, joined by Justices Ginsburg and Breyer, dissented from the denial of certiorari review, pointing out that what we had was an advisory jury system, and repeatedly the jury was told that their verdict was only a recommendation, it was only advisory, the responsibility lay with the trial judge. It's impossible to reconcile that with what we've discussed the Sixth Amendment requires in terms of jury findings that Ring made clear and now Hearst has made clear, particularly in terms of the state of Florida. I am hopeful that in this case we are going to get a resolution by the U.S. Supreme Court or the Florida Supreme Court where we don't have to wait years and years and have people executed. And then after the fact, when there's nothing that we can do about it, realize that their death sentences were handed down under an unconstitutional death penalty process. Florida leads the nation in exonerations. We've had 27 exonerations. Perhaps part of that is due to the fact that the jury need only be a majority vote under the old system, and that a life recommendation could be overridden by the judge and the defendant sentenced to death nonetheless. But in any event, we've had the most exonerations in the country. You know, when people are alive and we determine that their sentences are unconstitutional or we find evidence of innocence, we can do something about it. But that's not the case once we've executed someone, even where their death sentence, we now know, is unconstitutional.
You know, it's interesting when you bring up the question of exonerations and non-unanimity. We did a study. We took a look at all of the exonerations in Florida and the exonerations in Alabama, which also permitted non-unanimous jury recommendations for death. And we found that of the 21 exoneration cases in which we could figure out what the jury vote was, 19 of those involved non-unanimous jury votes. So you're looking at nearly 90% of the exonerations being cases with non-unanimous jury votes. And in all of the Alabama cases in which there were exonerations, except for one in which a jury was waived, every single one of them had at least one juror who had voted for life.
That's not surprising. That's not surprising.
So now here we are. We're in a situation where more than 100 people have been executed in Florida in circumstances in which we now know are unconstitutional. We have the Hitchcock reversals, we have the Hearst reversals, and so forth. And we have the Florida Supreme Court issuing a decision for close to 400 prisoners, saying that 200 on one side of the line will have their death sentences overturned, but another 160 or so who we recognize were unconstitutionally sentenced to death will be allowed to be executed. That begins to look like a system in which, whether it's okay under any legal doctrine of retroactivity to apply Hearst to some set of cases and not another set of cases, it begins to look like an overall scheme in which such a huge number of people are being executed despite constitutional violations that the whole system appears to be arbitrary.
Well, the system is particularly arbitrary when you analyze who is getting relief and who is not. Then I think the arbitrariness is underlined for us. The bottom line is the decision in Hearst v. Florida is so significant, I think, that it's unconscionable to execute prisoners whose death penalty sentence was handed down under a death penalty process that we now know is unconstitutional. You know, we may have the best judicial system in the world, but we are mere mortals. And as such, I think we're ill-equipped to fashion a justice system with the perfection that is required to justify taking another citizen's life.
Well, Karen, this is fascinating and in many respects disturbing. Thank you so much for spending time talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Discussions with Deepak. For more information, visit us at deathpenaltyinfo.org. You can subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or through your podcast app of choice.